Blog Talk Radio.
Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Wednesday, September 13th. Today we're going to be getting a little update on what is happening with DACA. As you know, DACA is now in the Congress. And of course, what happens next is one of those questions that we don't quite have an answer for. It. We know that it will probably be taken up by the Congress, but they also have to take up other things like Obamacare, like tort reform, like tax reform, like the debt ceiling, like the new budget. I mean, there's a lot of stuff on the plate, as they say, and DACA is not going to be an easy one. So we'll see what happens. I do think they're going to make an effort to deal with it, but you know, again, there's only so much that you can do in a Congress that it has a lot of things to do. We're also going to talk a little bit about the Clinton explanation tour. You know, she once had a listening tour. Remember back, I guess when she was considering running for president, so she ran around New York on an explanation or listening tour, listening to what New Yorkers had to say about whether or not she should run for president. I mean, is there any serious person out there who believes that Hillary would not have run for president if she was told by New Yorkers not to? I mean, this lady just has there's a phoniness about these people that is the Clintons that is absolutely amazing. And we're going to chat with our friend George Rodriguez. In fact, we've got George with us right now. Let me say hello to George. How are you, George?
I'm doing good, buddy. How are you?
Just fine. It looks like things in South Texas are slow but moving in the right direction. That's what it looks like.
Oh, yeah.
Up here.
Yeah. In fact, our church group went down on Saturday to help with some cleanup, and we're going to go back again this coming weekend. It is it's amazing, the devastation. I mean, it's not like Houston where you've got flooding. This was all wind damage, and you know, there is some water standing still in the area, but mostly it was very, very powerful wind. I mean, recording in the eastern part of Corpus Christi in Nueces County, they recorded something like 120 mile an hour wind at one point.
Yeah.
So the amount of destruction is amazing. It's really, really tremendous.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way. Of course, for those who may not be familiar, Corpus Christi, that area of Texas is more wide open. So winds there
very
would
flat.
Be a greater factor. Yeah, very flat.
Yeah.
So that's just perfect. Perfect for wind damage, where as you, when you go to Houston, that's more of a population where flood is
mm-hmm.
Is a bigger problem. But George, before we get into all the serious stuff, I know you will really love this little thing from On This Day in History. On this day in 1974, that's not that long ago, Policewoman with Angie Dickinson made its debut on television. She certainly, every policewoman after that, well, you couldn't help but compare every – and we say this with all due respect. We love the police, of course. But, I mean, when you have a lady like Angie Dickinson playing a policewoman, I guess at least on the appearance, it was probably something you couldn't help but think about, right? I did, George. I'll admit it.
Oh, yeah. I remember there were, you know, that was one of the favorite shows, because everybody, all the guys would gather around and watch the sexy, cute-looking policewoman.
Yes, I think everybody was looking at the policewoman and not the show.
Yeah, right, exactly.
I mean, like,
but
the,
you know, it's really, it
day.
Really dates. it really dates
yes,
us because, I mean, you know, female officers now are quite, you know, are quite normal. But that was so such a big deal that she was a policewoman.
Well, that's right. And I today, of course, you know, that show might not be so politically correct, you know, because she was, it was really her femininity that was. That, I mean, she was obviously tough and all of that as a police officer, but I'm saying she was clearly a beautiful woman who was playing a police officer. But it was a great show. You were talking about dating yourself, and of course that's exactly right when you go back to and look at these things. But that was also a pretty consequential month or a pretty consequential 10 days or so, because President Ford had pardoned President Nixon a few days before, so September 1974 was pretty amazing. Well, George, you spoke last night at a college or a group there in San Antonio. Tell us a little bit about it.
Well, it was the Trinity University conservative. They call themselves Tigers for Liberty, and it's a student group composed of conservatives and libertarians, and they invited me last week when the DACA news broke loose. There were a series of liberal groups and liberal individuals that spoke at Trinity University that had teach-ins, as they call them, where they came in and they spoke about DACA from their perspective, and you know how terrible it was that President Trump had ended it, and you know, lots of hand wringing as to what these poor students were going to do, as well as you know, rallying the students as to what they needed to do, how they needed to take action, et cetera, et cetera. And there was a series of there was something like six or seven individuals who spoke up in defense of DACA and against President Trump and any action to stop it or put any kind of brakes on it. So in the sense of equity, in the Tigers for Liberty invited me to come speak. And it was a group of about 20 individuals. It was a good group and very, very respectful. There was no one there that was confrontational or anything of the nature. In fact, I didn't even see any, you know, I don't know if there were anybody who was from the hard left. There were a couple of reporters, but it went very, very well. I explained to them, you know, the history of illegal immigration in South Texas from, you know, what I have seen, and explained to them how tragic the situation is of these children having been smuggled in or brought in. And how President Obama actually, in many ways, encouraged more children to come, or for parents to send their children so that they could be united at a later time with their parents. You know, and I tried to be very, very logical, very, very much following the rule of law and what the law says, and stayed away from the emotional aspects of it as much as we could. And it was very, very well received. I've got another invitation to speak on a panel at Rice University on the 6th of October. So I'll be doing that. I'll be participating in that panel at Rice University in Houston. But it was very, very well received. I think one of the things that a lot of these folks fail to understand, and I emphasized to them, was that DACA, that Trump actually has done the right thing and the humane thing, because they love to use that word, the humane thing for the Dreamers. He hasn't kicked them out. He hasn't asked them to be removed, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, it is up to the will of the people, i.e. Congress, to take action. Whether or not that happens and to what degree that happens, that remains to be seen. But that's one of the things that I emphasize to them, that this this situation is far from being dead. The Dreamers are far from being kicked out and deported. And it is now up to Congress to act in a legal manner, unlike Obama did, and address the issue.
Right, exactly. You're exactly right. And that's where the debate, and just for the purpose of history a little bit, because I think this gets lost a little bit, I remind my fellow Democrats all the time of this. Of course, they have a extremely selective view of history, as I'm sure you've learned over the years, George. November 2010, let me take you back to November 2010, the DREAM Act actually did make it to the U.S. Senate. It passed the Congress, of course, at the time, controlled by the Democrats. And it went to the U.S. Senate, and it was actually defeated in the U.S. Senate, where it couldn't get 60 votes in the U.S. Senate. And one of the reasons for that is that 7 Democrats voted against it. And so I always remind the public, or, you know, the supporters of DACA, that, in fact, the Congress in 2010 actually decided the issue and decided not to move forward with it. I personally, and I've told you before, and I've said this, I've written this, I have told you and said this before on the air, I am willing to make, I don't want to use the word concession, but I'm willing to make a case or a special case for many of these youngsters. I've met many of them, and I think if you were brought here when you were 2 and you're raised here, I'm willing to say, okay, I'm not going to hold your parents responsible for your law breaking. I'll give you a work visa or something so you can work in the United States, and, you know, let's see what happens 10 years from now or something like that. We'll give you a 10-year work visa so that you can work in the United States and not have to fear deportation. So I'm willing to do that, a narrow definition of what a dreamer is. I'm willing to do that and at least get this issue off the table, because when I look at the large illegal immigration problem, or when I look at the border issue, when I look at, it seems to me this is the easiest one to fix, because it can be done relatively easily. The problem that I see, George, I see 2 problems with the issue now in the hands of Congress. The first problem is, and this is something I learned the other day, and you probably know this because you're very well informed, but 80% of these dreamers, George, live in 5 states, California, Texas, Illinois, New York, and Florida. So that means that 80%, if you want to turn it the other way around, 80% live in 45 states. And my guess, 80% in 5 states, 20% in 45 states. I don't want to bore the people with numbers. But of those who live in those 45 states, my guess is that most of them live in cities, in urban areas already controlled by the Democrats. So if you are a congressman from Indiana, let's say rural Indiana, you're probably not going to hear a lot about this. And if you're going to hear from anybody, it's going to be probably the opposition to DACA. And so I think that's going to be the challenge, that the numbers are so concentrated in 5 states that it's going to be very difficult, I think, to get anything done. The other problem that I see, perhaps even bigger than the first one, is do the Democrats really want Donald Trump, President Trump, at a Rose Garden ceremony surrounded by dreamers signing the DREAM Act? And I don't think they do, George. I don't think so either.
I think the optics of that would probably send Hillary over the edge, among others.
There'll be a few Democrats, George, jumping from buildings. Look at all the tall buildings in San Antonio, and you're going to see the roof of a bunch of Democrats jumping down. But yeah, that would be tough for a lot of Democrats to swallow, don't you think?
Yeah, it would. It truly would. This situation is such a political windfall for them, where they can continue to play and play and play this violin, that they don't want the music to stop.
They don't want it
to end in any form or fashion. And it is amazing. It is amazing, you know, that people don't understand that the idea of Donald Trump, like you said, being surrounded by dreamers as he signs a Dream Act on their behalf. Oh my gosh. You know, the only thing that I can think of would be that they might scream that it's not enough. And then that would, you know, that would also be kind of productive for them. But, I just don't see how they would
the only thing worse than having Donald Trump sign the Dream Act surrounded by a bunch of dreamers in the Rose Garden would be Hillary Clinton losing the election after all the experts told them that she was going to win. So that would be the only other possible thing that could be worse. But I do think, and on a serious note, I do think this is one of the reasons the Democrats are going to try to make the definition of dreamer so broad that I think that's going to discourage some Republicans. In other words, I think, for example, if you could say on an up and down vote, we're going to take young people who are here in school or have no criminal record, maybe young people who want to serve in the military or whatever, and we're going to give these young people some kind of legalization, I think that could probably get an up and down vote, and my guess is yes, that it would pass. But if you start getting complex, which is what happened in November of 2010.
Exactly.
In November of 2010, exactly. It wasn't 800,000. It was like 7 million people. Well, if it gets like that, then it's not going to pass. And it's not going to pass. And then, of course, the Democrats can blame it on the Republicans again, which is what they always do. So it's a tough one. It's a tough one because, as I say, I think some of these young people merit some special consideration. But I do think you're right about the way President Obama did it. President Obama actually, you know, I was with Telemundo on Sunday morning. Well, we taped it on Friday, and it aired on Sunday morning. And what I told a young man who was with me, a dreamer, a very nice young man who was a dreamer, I said to him, you know, President Obama didn't do you any favors. In fact, what he did was to give you a check without funds. A check that you really couldn't cash because he didn't give you a piece of legislation. He gave you something that the next president could actually terminate, which is what happened in this case. George, I got a couple of other issues I want to get into with you. So let's take a little break, and we'll be back with our friend George Rodriguez right after this.
Carlos Quedes, Harpist, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
My good friend Carlos, Saturday night, that's the place to be. Nola, you can do some dancing. You can do some wonderful, wonderful eating. Let's get back to our friend George Rodriguez. George, a couple of other issues that I wanted to bounce around with you this today. One is interesting, and this has to do with Texas. The Supreme Court basically has left the congressional maps intact here in Texas, and it has left them in place. Which is, I think, the right thing to do. I mean, congressional boundaries should be drawn up by the majority party. This is what has always happened in American history. The Democrats in California do a pretty good job of protecting Democrats. So I think it was a good win, George.
I do, too. I mean, you know, that's something that I've been writing about and talking about for the past, for the past 2 years because the I mean, you know, the facts are these, like you said, it is the right of the party in power. Now, we have in Texas, we have a Republican Party that won by popular vote, and it was legal binding vote by folks at the grassroots who voted for their state representatives, their Congress folks, and. You know, there was then these folks in turn turned around and legally following the outline, the dictates of the Voting Rights Act, followed what they needed to do. And you know, I never at any point saw any problem other than it was Republicans protecting Republicans, drawing the map. That's the whole problem. And, you know, now the Democrats were screaming and yelling about Hispanic and minority districts. Well, you know, to me, that really smacks, Silvio, that really smacks of resegregating or segregating voters. I mean, I don't understand how these folks who have wanted equality and fairness and everything else, suddenly when it comes to a voting map, want to segregate minorities. I don't understand that. If anything,
right.
You know, get minorities as integrated socially, economically, and politically
right.
as you want. And
well,
that just doesn't seem
point.
To be the case with these folks.
No, it's a good point, because if you and I had this conversation the other day with a friend of mine who's an African-American conservative, and we were talking about this, and I said, you know, if you require by law that there have to be, let's say, three black districts in Texas, one in Dallas, one in Houston, and maybe one in San Antonio, I'm not sure, or Austin, wherever, then what that means is that you're going to have basically in all the other districts, you're going to have a disproportionate number of white voters and a disproportionate number of black voters. In other words, in a perfect world, every district would look like the population of the state percentage wise in a perfect world. That's never going to happen perfectly. But if you take a district, for example, like Eddie Bernice Johnson here in South Texas or South Dallas, which is 90% black. Well, that means that the rest of the districts, there are not going to be enough black people, if you will, to balance it out. So I think maybe the thing to do is not to require these ethnic districts and to say, you know what, let's mix the population a little bit more so that it looks more like the state, George. I mean, maybe I'm being too theoretical, but that's kind of what it seems like to me. But I don't know. I mean, if you have Eddie Bernice Johnson with 90% of the black vote in one district, I guarantee you everything around there is going to be Republican, George.
That's exactly right. I mean, you know, the fact of the matter is, why do you want to segregate voters? I mean, I thought the whole idea of the civil rights movement was integration and segregation. And here, you know, it is purely race politics being played. If Bernice Johnson, John Price, the county commissioner?
Sure.
The county commissioner, I mean, what are they afraid of that they have to play the race card in the name of a party? I don't understand that. You should want integration. You should want equality and fairness. There is nothing wrong with minorities being mixed in with majority whites. There is nothing wrong with that. The only problem is that minority Democrats are in danger of being elected. That's the problem, and we got to call
The other issue too, George. The other issue too that I think is very interesting. Is that this whole idea of creating these so-called ethnic districts is based on something that I feel is entirely wrong. I don't believe that a black person is going to get better representation because he or she has a black or – in other words, to me, you should vote for the most qualified person. I mean, there are probably – if you look at some of these districts run by black Democrats, not exactly doing very well, most of them.
Exactly.
And so
exactly.
Just because you have – just because you are black, that doesn't mean that your congressman should be black. I think it should be, you know, you should be able to look at people for whoever they are and whatever contribution they can make to your community, rather than simply say, well, you know, black people have to be represented by black people. You know, Cubans have to be represented by Cubans or whatever. No, I've never
voted
for
somebody. That is absolute insanity.
But that's what makes it impossible then. Not to have, you know, this map, I think, in Texas, I agree with you, was created to benefit Republicans, just like the map in California was created to benefit Democrats. I get that. I understand that. I don't dispute that the intent was to elect Republicans. But I think there would be there probably would be a little bit better districts if we didn't assume that Mexicans had to vote for Mexicans or blacks had to vote for blacks. And I just don't think that's good for them. So I do think it was a good victory, though, because it shows the presence of Justice Gorsuch, who in a couple of days has actually done quite well. He not only voted for this, but he also voted to support President Trump on the ban. So Gorsuch is in. Let's just put it that way. The judge is in. And so far, so good. Which, by the way, getting back to DACA for a minute, one of the points that I made to the other day is that had this gone to the Supreme Court, which was going to go to the Supreme Court, it would have been defeated 5-4. So it would have been we would have been back where we are right now, but it would have happened 6-9 months from now, whenever. So in a sense, what President Trump did was to actually recognize the inevitable. The inevitable is that DACA was going to die in the courts, as it did, and then move it to Congress. One quick reaction, George. We're kind of running out of time, but I did want to spend a few minutes talking about Hillary Clinton, who has apparently decided to do another tour. This time she's promoting a book, and you know I wrote a book, so everybody should have a book. That's fine with me, but. I think in this case, I think they need the money, frankly, and I hate to be cynical, but I think they do. I think they need the money. The foundation is laying off people. The funds have dried up. And these people, you know, the Clintons got used to a lifestyle. It was pretty good with that foundation, planes and all these donations. All of that is gone. And now they're back, I guess, to living with the retirement. I guess they're living on Social Security now, plus his pension, if you will. And so we're back to real life. But besides the need for money, I have a post at the American Thinker today saying that it's only a matter of time before she goes on TV and tells us they're broke and that they really need they really need money. But I do want to say one thing, George. Larger picture. I want to get your reaction to this larger picture. I've never seen this happen before. I've seen every losing candidate. I guess I can safely say that I have watched every concession speech going back to Senator McGovern, that is for president. And what usually happens in the United States, George, is that the loser goes on TV, congratulates the winner, makes a concession speech. Obviously, he's got to say something to his supporters because they're so invested in his campaign and losing is tough, as you and I know, having been on both sides of these things. But once the concession speech is over, once it's over, it's over. You know, I don't remember Mitt Romney 6-7 months after his election talking about why he lost or whatever, Nixon, whatever example you want to dig up. So it just seems to me that this is really arrogant on her part. And I don't think it's helping her image that much, George. I don't see how this could be, you know, I don't know. This is not good for the country. She ought to just, I mean, she can write books all she wants, but she ought to stop trying to explain why she lost, George.
Well, but again, this is not, to her, this is not about the country. This is about her, and it always has been about her. This pity party, this never-ending pit. I mean, this is her psychological makeup. She is not going to stop whining and screaming and crying about this, because that is the level. To the level that she is doing this is to the level that she actually believed that she was going to win, and that she should have won, and that somehow in the great makeup of fate and life, she deserved it. And since it didn't happen, then something is wrong with the world. Something is wrong with life. Something is wrong with nature that she didn't win. And she's going to scream and cry and protest till the end of time, unfortunately. I wish somebody would pull her aside. Maybe they have. But I think that this woman definitely needs some kind of psychological attention. She needs counseling. she needs to get over it. But you know, maybe she is nuts. She is truly nuts, and she needs to be committed. She needs some very strong medication. But that is her psychology at this point. This is her psychology at this point. She feels that she should have won.
Well, and again, if I may go back and promote my American Thinker piece for a quick second, out today at the American Thinker, I say that I quote Rasmussen. The Rasmussen report says that 61% of the country wants her to retire. Just kind of step aside, Hillary. Thank you for your service, you know, but step aside, it's over. And then, of course, I write the little note in my American Thinker, retired to what? Sitting by the fireplace talking to Bill? I mean, there is a psychological, I don't want to play, you know, psychologist because I'm not, but there is something about this lady that when you prepare your entire life and you surrender all your dignity and you basically put all your eggs in one basket, that you were going to be elected president, and then you have a bunch of experts tell you you were going to win on top of that. When that's all you have in your life, then you cannot deal with the alternative. You know, if this is all you have, then what are you going to do? I mean, what is this lady going to do? And in that sense, I do think this is a very sad case. A real human tragedy, because she basically put everything on the line. I mean, her whole life, her willingness to be humiliated and abused by her husband publicly, most women would have never put up with that. But she did because she knew that was the only ticket to the presidency. And now all of a sudden, there is no presidency.
It's gone.
So how do you live with yourself? I mean, how do you wake up in the morning and say, you know, I did all these things because I wanted to be president. I put up with this guy because I wanted to be president, and now it's over. So I do think there is again, I don't want to play psychiatrist because I'm not, and I don't think it's really – I don't enjoy doing it because I'm not qualified. But I do think there is something to be said that this lady does have – there's a mental problem here. There's an unwillingness to deal with reality. And I don't think she's ever going to be able to cope with it. I really don't. I mean,
you're right.
I remember reading something, George, when President Bush, the first Bush, lost the White House, he was very disappointed, as I was. Okay, I was disappointed. And when President Bush apparently got back to Texas, he was, you know, a little sorry. And Mrs. Bush said, just get over it, okay? You've got me, you've got grandchildren, you have and so, you know, President Bush, after losing the election, could go back to his source, his wife, his family, his grandchildren, and he's done rather well in his retirement, the university at A&M, I mean, the library at A&M and so on. But she doesn't have any of that. I mean, she doesn't have that fallback position because she was so convinced and her whole life had been based on the fact that she was going to win. So it is, in that sense, George, a very sad situation. And as despicable as she and her husband are, I do feel a little sense of sympathy for them, for her, especially at this point, George.
Yeah, it is a pathetic situation. And, you know, I mean, like I said, I think that it merits that she should really seek counseling on this, because she's not going to be able to move on until she gets over it. And, you know, it's done. Find a hobby.
No, you're right. I mean, it sounds really obvious to say it, of course, but you're exactly right. It's a lot more complicated. Well, George, as always, thank you for your time. Thank you for the great work you do down in South Texas, and we'll keep an eye on things. But I think right now I would have to say DACA is like 50-50 right now, I would say, in the House. What's your sense?
Yeah, it's in their lap. It's in their lap, and I would like to say that it is in the lap of the will of the people, and hopefully the people will be heard as to what they want and to what degree they want this Dreamer Act to function. I agree fully, and you know, and it's interesting that the Democrats, the seven Democrats you mentioned that voted against it, are no longer in office, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
That's right. That's exactly right. It's just going to be tough. Now, a couple of them are actually in office. Montana, Missouri, those are still around. But a lot of the others, ironically, went down with Obamacare in 2014.
Yep.
So it's kind of interesting. A lot of those Democrats went down with Obamacare. George, have a great day as always. And is it cooler down there? Because it's a little nicer up here.
It is. It's been cooler here for the past couple of days. It's really, really nice.
Yeah, it is here too. It's not spring. It's not autumn yet. So I don't want to.
No,
don't
no,
check
but
out
it's
your
just,
sweater
it's
yet.
It's horrible.
Well, you know, when it's 100 degrees and all of a sudden you get 85, you're saying, wow, I never thought 85 would feel this good.
Get my sweater.
Get my sweater. It's 85 degrees. I don't have to wear, you know, it's not 100 anymore. George, have a great day as always. And
you
thank
too.
You for your
Take
time.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All
Bye-bye.
Right. George Rodriguez, our good friend down in South Texas. You know, as I mentioned in my American Thinker piece today, it is really sad what we're watching with Hillary Clinton. And the easiest thing for me to do as a partisan, and I am a partisan, I don't hide the fact that I am a partisan, but the easiest thing would be to take shots at Hillary. But the reality is that this is really very sad to see her. And I hope her family gets a hold of her and says, Hillary, stop it. You're not helping yourself. You're not helping anybody. You're certainly not helping Democrats. Because the Democrats who think that the election was stolen, I mean, those Democrats, they already got those people. So they already have those votes. So they need to go out and get the votes of the people who switched to Donald Trump. And saying that Donald Trump stole the election or whatever, that's not going to get you those people. So hopefully we have heard the last of Hillary Clinton. She's actually, and I'm going to say something complimentary to her right now. You know, when Richard Nixon left the presidency after the resignation, when Richard Nixon left the presidency, he obviously had a lot of problems. And the way he got over Watergate or losing the presidency was that he spent much of the late 70s and 80s and into the early 90s writing books about foreign policy. And that's how he basically got himself back in the game. And by the time he passed away in 1994, 20 years after his resignation, there was a certain respect of Richard Nixon as a foreign policy statesman that he earned by simply writing books and becoming a real expert on then the Soviet Union, now Russia. And maybe Hillary can do that. You know, maybe she can look at a foreign policy issue that she's fond of or something that she believes in, and she ought to concentrate her time on that and just worry about that and develop that part of her life and move on from politics. I mean, the politics is over for Bill and Hillary Clinton. It's over. I mean, there's nothing there for them. It's over. And the quicker they realize that, I think the happier they're going to be. Thanks for listening, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.